front of the door, it's Dave!
Who?
Dave! D-A-V-E!
Dave?
Right, man, Dave.
Dave's not here!
Hey everyone, it's Dave, and welcome to another edition of Just What Do You Think You're Doing, Dave? Did you ever think about maps? When you were growing up, especially if you grew up in the 70s or the 80s or even the early 90s, you probably had a two-dimensional map up on the wall of your classroom, maybe in the community center, the library, different places you'd go. You'd see these two-dimensional maps that represented the Earth. Maybe they were local maps that showed something in your community or an area nearby, maybe just the state you lived in. Maybe they were the map of the entire world, but they were in two dimensions. It was a big map that would cover a wall. There were also smaller versions of it that appeared in atlases. These would be books that would be bound, and they would have inside them maps of the world where you could see different pictures of different places as viewed from space or somewhere else. Often they were drawn in some way, but they were representing a space. And they also had these two-dimensional maps that you could get a lot of different places, gas stations, your local AAA office. You could pick them up in libraries, where it was a two-dimensional map of the community you were in or the state you were in that gave you sort of routing and different places you could go and would let you see how to get around and give the major highways and so forth. But again, they were in two-dimensional space. Now, in a local area, I'll argue it's not such a big deal. But when you start to look at the entire Earth, it's a problem. Three-dimensional space does not translate easily to two-dimensional space. So here's the example I'd use. If you think about driving a car, you're driving your car on a road, and really, you're driving in two dimensions. You can go forward and backward, and you can go left and right. Now, I'll grant you that sometimes there's a third dimension because you go over a hill or under a tunnel or something like that, so there is some dimensionality to the third dimension. But you're still bound by the fact that you can only really drive in two dimensions. You can only go where the road takes you. You can't go up in the air and move around. Now, on the other hand, three-dimensional space can be taken on by an airplane. And an airplane really moves in those three dimensions. It can go forward and presumably backward, though really it doesn't move backward most of the time. You know, when you're on the runway, sometimes when you're backing away from the gate, you can go backward, though it's actually accomplished typically by a tow carrier type thing that's pushing you out. But you can go backward and forward, and of course you can go left and right, and naturally you can go up and down. So you have the three-dimensional space accomplished. Now, planes also have the luxury of actually being able to move in three other dimensions that are a little bit unique. They have three other things called roll, pitch, and yaw. Roll is the ability to kind of flip from one side to the other, and you'll think about it if you're thinking about, you know, one of these movies where they have the big flight scenes, the big action scenes, where the plane tips over or rolls around or something. That's roll. You can do it in a smaller scale where the plane just kind of rolls part of the way. It's a big turn that it takes, a banking turn, something like that. That's part of roll. Pitch is where it goes up and down a little bit. You're tilting the nose upward or the nose downward. You're pitching the plane to make it go a little bit differently, but you're not using that third dimensional space to actually change your altitude. You're only doing it to change the orientation of the plane. And then there's yaw, which is this ability for the plane to kind of jut left and right. It's sort of the turning motion that it does, but it moves the plane in two-dimensional space, which is really kind of cool. So planes can really accomplish this three-dimensional space really well. But you can't translate that to a car, and a car really doesn't represent what a plane does. In the same way, the three-dimensional object that is the Earth, a globe, is not represented well in a two-dimensional space like a map. So, the maps you've been looking at your entire life are wrong. And they're wrong on a couple of fronts. The first is the prominence of the countries. The United States has always been big into map building. So the United States has always been featured on most Western maps as the central focal point of where the map is. So when you look at a map, when you sat in your classroom and you looked at it, the United States was always pretty much centered on that map, which is kind of interesting when you think about it. Why does the United States get that central point? And that means that either Russia or China gets cut off and half of them are on one side of the map and half of them are in the other. It's kind of a weird thing that we chose to do to make the United States prominent. Now, the interesting part of that is, if you look at the way the globe is sliced, you have the northern and southern hemispheres, where you're cut across at the equator, and then you have the eastern and western hemispheres, and they're divided by the prime meridian. The prime meridian is the central point where we decided that, so that point on the map has changed several times. It was actually somewhere in Greece at some point. I believe it was in the Roman Empire at some point. And then, of course, it was in France, and most recently, it has moved to England. It's in Greenwich, England these days. So that's where the prime meridian goes through. So that's how you separate out the west and the east. Now, there's a little story behind that that I'll probably have to tell on another podcast about how we decided on those locations and sort of how longitude works, because it's really complicated. We could get the latitude fairly easily and figure out where the equator was, because if you think about it, we could create an equator that would have been straight up and down through the Earth. It could have been at like 45 degrees if you're looking at the Earth, or it could be at 0 degrees where it is right now. So, you know, basically flat across the center. And we were able to calculate that fairly easily because we were able to discover the latitude using some mathematics, star alignment, and some other things like that. But longitude, that spot where we wanted to have the prime meridian, is much harder to come by. And where we wanted to put that is kind of complicated. And there's a whole story behind it and why we can move it and why it's not easy to work with. And that's another part to this problem I'll get back to in just a couple of minutes. So the second part of the problem with what's wrong with the maps has to do with three-dimensional space and the way it's kind of contorted. So if you were to take a two-dimensional flat map and you were to fold it around to make a sphere out of it, it would never quite work out. You couldn't get it to fold in the right ways. Now, there was a movement sometime in the late 70s, the early 80s, to take a map and actually take it from the globe and cut arcs out of it. So essentially what you were doing was peeling back the globe, and when you put it in a two-dimensional space, you had these arches that went across and kind of represented the right spatial relationship in what was going on the planet. But that never really caught on, and it's kind of complicated to understand, and it didn't look right because you couldn't match up the edges of countries with other parts of the countries because of the way the curvature worked. So instead, what map makers did was they made changes to the dimensionality of the maps. So if you look at a flat map that has Greenland at the top, usually on the top left, and you have Australia on the bottom right, typically, as an island, you will realize those two countries are misrepresented in scale. That's true of a lot of different countries that are along there. The ones that are around the center of the map are more or less scaled correctly, but as you get further away from the center, especially further north or south, they get out of proportion. So if you were to actually take the square mileage, the distance across east to west and the distance north and south, and figure out how big Australia is, and took that, you cut out Australia or Greenland and put them on the United States, they'd look very small. But if you actually scaled it and actually drew out something that was the same square mileage that as what we know it is, we know that it has a certain distance across and a certain distance north and south, and you cut that out and put it on the United States, you would find that it actually is a different scale. It's actually much bigger than it looks on the map. So we diminished the way these countries look because we wanted to present the map in a certain way. And it's really confusing. Now, giving credit where credit is due, map makers were really good at drawing up everything that they saw. They drew all the little inland areas, the tributaries, the waterways, all these different things that they saw were all part of a map. So if you look at a map from the 15 or 1600s, and you look at the area that they were drawing, and what it looks like today, they're very similar. You could account for a lot of the differences in it due to continental drift and changes in the environment and sea levels rising and whatever, but you get that same sort of view. It looks very similar because they did a really good job of capturing what it looked like in that two-dimensional space. And they did this through a form of artistry. They would go out there and they would actually just stand at the area and draw, and actually just draw what they saw. And typically they would, if it was somewhere near-ish to home, they would take a horse, and go out there, and go visit the area and start drawing. If it was further away, like say the New World, they would have to take a ship and get there, and the ship would go up the coast and they'd be mapping it up as they were going up the coast. Lewis and Clark are the greatest examples of how to do this really well when you do it thoughtfully. They were finding that Northwest Passage heading out toward the western United States, and they did a really remarkable job of documenting everything from the terrain to what the land looked like, to actually looking at the fauna and flora and documenting it and bringing back samples with them when they returned to Washington some years later. It's a remarkable thing that they did. So you really get the essence of what it was like to draw these things based on what they were doing. And that's cool that they were able to do this, and everyone was able to do this. And it was really kind of neat that they were able to pull it together. Now, returning to what I was talking about before about this longitude, this distance from north to south, and figuring out where on the Earth you are. Latitude, as I said, was fairly easy. We could use the stars. But longitude required a third dimension, some third object to be able to understand how you connect to that space where you decide where the longitude line is. And ships had a notorious problem going and understanding what longitude they were at so they could actually make it across to the New World. The latitude was easy. You kind of went in an angle. You kind of knew where the latitude was. You could kind of figure out where you were. But the longitude was always a problem. And that meant that when they were drawing maps, there was a scale problem there too. You drew the map of England or Portugal or Spain or whatever port you left from, and then you got to the coast of the New World and you started mapping what you saw. But the problem was you really had no idea of how long you'd been at sea. How far away were you? You really couldn't understand. Maybe you saw it was 7 sunrises, 15 sunrises, 30 sunrises. Whatever it was, you had some amount of time that it took to get across the ocean. But you had no land that you were drawing at that point in time. So you had no relative scale to see how big the oceans were. So when they started drawing some of these new worlds relative to the old world, they were out of scale because they really had no idea how far apart they were. They made a best guess based on the daylight and how many sunsets and sunrises there were. But it really was kind of hard because we didn't have that dimensionality. And because the world is a globe and you're starting somewhere fairly far north, like say the port of England, port in England, and you're winding up south somewhere in the Caribbean, you really have to deal with the dimensionality there. It's hard to interpret that and make it work. So map makers had an inherent problem that they had to guesstimate what the distances were. So when you'd see the Atlantic Ocean, they would just draw sort of an ocean, and it would be their best guess at how big it was and how far away the continents were. And they would often draw some strange things in there like sea serpents or mermaids or storm clouds or something just to kind of fill it in a little bit and make it interesting because nobody really wanted to see that. They just wanted to see the topographical, here's my two-dimensional map. Now, the other thing that happened along the way, map makers tried very hard to represent what we knew to be a three-dimensional object, this Earth, into something that was two dimensions. They tried many different things, different approaches and techniques to creating maps that actually made sense of the world in that two-dimensional space. No one, early on anyway, could come up with a way to represent it on a globe. They just couldn't quite capture that. Eventually we did. We sort of started to do that. But earlier on, we were just trying to draw it on two-dimensional maps. So map makers took very many approaches to this. Sometimes they would try and draw the entire world on a two-dimensional map in sort of a circle. Knowing that it was a circle, knowing that it was a globe, they would try and draw it out and make it make sense. So they would draw these different places and try to make the map fit as though you were looking at it, say, from the North Pole. Now, because it was two dimensions again, everything was out of scale and everything looked weird. And they'd make some interesting notations about what they were doing, which has led to some interesting interpretations of that over time. People see those and they go, oh, see, people always thought the world was flat. This is the real world. This is why the world is flat. And this is where we fall apart as an educational system because we don't really counter that. You can see the world is round. You can see it from space. You can stand outside. You can do the experiment I talked about with putting sticks in the ground and see that the world is actually round. But people can't understand that empirical thing, that very basic thing, that somehow they have to be right and everyone else must be wrong. And what they see is deceiving them in some way. And here's part of the problem with our society, right? It's just we don't think about education as important. We don't try to counter this. And this is a gap we have. And so people come up and they say, oh, flat earth because blah, 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 and they have nothing to back that up with. And they look at the two-dimensional maps they grew up with, and that makes sense. But they forget to measure the size of these different places that are far off, that would be fairly far north or fairly far south, to understand if they were actually that dimension, if they fit. It's really weird. And so it's kind of strange that we don't do that and do it well, and we don't really think logically about this. You know, we know what it is. We know what the Earth looks like. And we can understand that. We just need to apply a little rigor to our thinking. So as you think about these two-dimensional maps, they were wrong, but they were useful to a point because they really did a good job of articulating what the world looked like from a topographical sort of view if you were looking at it directly. Now, I mentioned before that you could go into like a local gas station or whatever and pick up a physical two-dimensional map, something that you would unfold, or these triptychs that the AAA office would put out. A lot of the different map companies also created very localized maps for a city or a community where they would show you all the street names and how they interconnected, and you could kind of flip the maps on a spiral-bound sheet to kind of go around to different places. And these worked really well because you were in a localized space, you could actually get from point A to point B. But it was always kind of strange because of the way you had to think about it in two dimensions. And I remember learning how to read a map and understand how a map works and really getting the essence of it so that you could kind of translate it in your mind to three dimensions, right? Even though we're going in a short distance, it's still something, there's still something about it that it has to, you have to think in three dimensions to be able to make the world work and this map be efficient in some way. And it's a lost art to a large degree. Now that we have Google Maps and we have Apple Maps and we have all these great ways of looking at the world, that doesn't matter so much anymore. That skill to read a map, that two-dimensional map, really doesn't matter. In fact, I'll be honest and say that I use my GPS in my car more often than I should. I know my way around where I live, but I still use it because it's easier. It's sort of a convenience. And so I just do that because the world works easily that way. And that reminds me, as we moved into this world of having this understanding of three-dimensional space and being able to use a GPS, I remember when the first couple of geographic positioning satellites launched, the military was going to use them to make their world a better place, so they could understand where all their ships and troops were on the map and be able to use that to their advantage. And then they could also understand where their enemy was as well. So if you think about World War II, the military would use these two-dimensional maps. They would be at the general headquarters. They would have smaller versions of it that were on aircraft carriers and other things that were out in the field. Some of the troops would have some that they would use. Sometimes they would carry a physical map with them to be able to find out where they were. But once these GPS units became available, it became much easier to find their way to somewhere and be able to get somewhere and understand where they were exactly and where the enemy, whoever they would be, might be as well. So it was kind of neat because it really moved the needle. And what they told us was when they first launched the GPS satellites, they're going to make them available to us as consumers, as individuals, but they could turn them off at any time. Now, of course, that never happened. And it's grown into something much more. It's an industry now, right? It's something greater than that. It became so useful and such a part of our everyday lives that you can't imagine it going away. And I can't imagine that they would take it away at this point because there's so many satellites up there that provide this sort of GPS information to us. I remember when I first got my first GPS, one of the things you had to do was you had to turn it on and let it acquire a signal. It had to wait for three satellites to come overhead and come into view before it could triangulate your position. Triangle, three positions, it had to actually figure out where you were on the map using the satellites overhead. So each satellite had a relative position, and when they triangulated, each one found you, then they could represent a position that you were on the Earth. And they were within, I don't know, maybe 10 feet or something. They were really, really close. And I remember one of the things I did, I had my GPS, and I walked across the Golden Gate Bridge. And I let the GPS track my paces, and I actually stored that information and downloaded it to my computer later, overlaid it onto a map, and saw that I was 10 feet off the bridge in the Pacific Ocean, walking across looking at the Golden Gate Bridge. But that was the thing. It was really neat to be able to track my location and see where I was. So cool. I mean, that was the late 1990s or so when I had my first GPS, and it was just really, really amazing. It was so cool. And then over time, they've got better and better, and they're more accurate now. Now they're down to within like a half a meter or so. I mean, you're so close that you really don't notice the difference. And if you use one when you're driving, it's pretty much got you on the road the whole time. It's really remarkable. Now, a couple of years ago, I happened to be I was in some harbor, and there was a bunch of Navy cadets who were manning a ship. And it was a small, you know, maybe 60-footer or so. And their goal was to find their way to a location using only maps, no GPS. Because the art form of actually using the maps was important. That's part of being a good officer, right? And as we think about us as people, How do we use that? I said myself that I've lost that art of being able to read a map and understand where I'm going. And I'm kind of sad for that. Maybe it's a skill I need to resume in some way. I'd probably, muscle memory would probably come back pretty quickly if I spent the time to try it. But here are these cadets, younger guys, who were learning how to read maps and navigate by them. Because it's important to be able to do that. Maybe you get cut off somehow. Maybe something happens. You need to be able to think on your feet and be able to get to somewhere if you need to, using only the maps. You know, the maps that they use on ships, when they use a two-dimensional map like that, they're just a map that lays out. That's all there is to it. And you have to figure out where you are based on the positions, the relative height of the sun, the stars in the sky, other factors that are out there. You can figure out where you are. And so they have to do that. They have to learn it. And I watched that and I was fascinated. They let us come on the ship and they were telling us all about it. And it was really, really neat to just listen to the story about how they're still doing that today, because it's important. Because two-dimensional maps still have a purpose. They still get us to places, but it's just really, really interesting how we have to think about them, because we don't really think about maps in that way. And really, because we kind of misused them or misapplied them, we sort of miss out on the nature of what they really are. And so when you think about maps and think back to the maps you saw on the walls, think about what it means. How did someone do that? How did we get there? What were these maps? Why did we have the United States in the center of them? Why do we show it the way it's shown? Why is it so hard to understand how three-dimensional space works? You know, our minds have trouble understanding three-dimensional space. It's really complicated. I remember as I was thinking about this podcast, one of the things I was thinking about was how would you slice out the prime meridian? Where would you decide to put it? And how would you slice out the equator and where would you decide to put it? And I was having a little trouble rationalizing in my head three-dimensional space. It was just something trivial. I had to look at like a ball and actually kind of study it for a minute before I realized what I was talking about. It was just a moment in time where you realize three-dimensional space is hard to grasp. I know we work in it all the time. We live in it. But when you start talking about three-dimensional space in a bigger realm, it's much harder. So I just wanted you to take a moment and think about maps, why they're wrong, and what's wrong about them. And that is my podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. And remember, if we can dream it, we can always do it.
What's your point, David?